Hey guys, welcome to the very first WWE Podcast Mailbag episode where we take all of your questions and voicemails, put them on the show and answer them, comment on them, and have a little fun. And there's no jingle. This is just a straightforward episode. It's just to the point. And that's what this is for. So keep the questions coming. Keep the voicemails coming. If you want to send in a question, you can do that. Whether you want to actually text a question, write it on the email, or you can create an audio file and attach it to the email. Both of those are fine. Or you just call the voice box that we have, the voicemail box, which is 518-952-0247. And so we're going to get to as many as we can tonight and answer your questions. I'll be a little bit more brief than I normally am in my responses, just for the sheer volume that we have. Alrighty, well, let's get to that very first voicemail and respond.
Hey there, man. How's it going? Sean from New Jersey. I do apologize for the background noise. It's very windy here right now. A lot of crazy weather. I wanted to bring up a couple of things with this week that we just had. One thing I saw was Adam Rhea and Murphy making out. It was one thing that really is going to put a pop in Murphy's ratings. It's going to get into, like, more of a main event status. And I had a feeling for sure that it was probably going to happen, and it was going to, and seeing Seth Rollins laugh at it, it looked like he enjoyed it all. And I know it's not going to go well for the Steelers fans. Number two, the Usos, like, heel turn is not what we expected. Because one ring did that, quote, fall in line thing. And he went by his word. Jey Uso brutally, and I mean brutally, attacked Daniel Bryan and injured him. And I saw on WWE.com that he's now recuperating at home. And hopefully he gets better soon.
Hey, Sean, thank you for calling in. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Yeah, your voicemail was a little rough. I know the weather you said was not great, so it's fine. I got the gist of it. So I did pick up the Daniel Bryan piece of it, how he was beat down by Jey Uso, and he followed through with his word. I like that. I'm a fan of that. I like that Jey Uso is the most relevant he's ever been in his career, ever. And Jey Uso is main event talent. I mean, he's proven that he can hang and not just do the silly speaking in kind of nursery rhymes and just ending everything with the Uso penitentiary. I could get over him calling everyone Us. Can you just go by the name? Like, we don't need to give everyone cute nicknames. That's not my favorite thing. Okay, it's kind of like I said earlier this week about Angelo Dawkins calling everyone fam. Okay, can we just say family or just use their real name, please? No, just a preference. Just preference. So thank you, Sean, for calling in. And I probably didn't answer every question, but it was a little choppy. So feel free to call back when you're in a closed building. I think that will definitely help. Alrighty, let's get to the next one.
Hey, Matt, it's Brad from Pennsylvania. Today I actually have a question for you. Looking for a little insight into the whole Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt thing. I know you get a ton of emails and have a lot of followers and stuff, so I'm sure you obviously don't remember everything every person tells you about themselves, so I'm sure you forgot that I literally took off like 20-some years of watching wrestling. I didn't watch wrestling from probably around the end of NWO WCW till WrestleMania 2019 last year, so obviously I missed the entire Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt program, and honestly, I'm just being a little too lazy to go back and look right now, so I'd just like for you to tell me, did they end up having a match? And I know you said on your podcast that it made you stronger. I was just wondering who actually won the match. And the other thing I was wondering, were they both heels then also for their first program? Because I don't know. I mean, they seem like they've both always been heels to me. I know Randy was sort of a baby face for a little bit while I've been watching, but that's all I got for you today. Just that question, buddy. I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, Brad. Thank you for calling in. And yeah, I did forget. I did forget that you haven't watched wrestling in quite a while. You had a massive gap in things that you missed. But let me get you up to speed. So back in, I think it was WrestleMania 33. That's the rivalry that is sparking the Fiend to be angry at Randy Orton because he burned down Sister Abigail's house. That's what Randy Orton did. I believe they even had a House of Horrors match. That's actually kind of worth seeing. It's so hokey. I mean, it's just, you got to see it. But Randy Orton ended up burning down Sister Abigail's house that he located somehow in the woods. And that's the image you always see painted on the Firefly Funhouse, is that the fire trail leading to the burned down house was because of Randy Orton. Now, the results, to answer your question, Randy Orton did beat Bray Wyatt. I was actually in Orlando at the time when this, and in person attendance for WrestleMania 33, and this was not one of the best matches. In fact, it was actually probably one of the bottom matches, if not the worst match of the night, simply for the fact of the chemistry wasn't super good. They had images, like, I remember Bray Wyatt, because at that time he was the Swamp Cult leader, don't forget, he wasn't the Fiend, okay? He was the Swamp Cult leader that spoke in riddles and just cackled to himself in backstage promos while he has an Edison bulb above his head. I mean, that was the every single week Bray Wyatt we got. And Bray Wyatt ended up using images of worms and stuff that appeared on the canvas. It was bizarre. It made no sense. And if Randy Orton is, you know, a grown adult, he would realize, oh, well, these are just images, right? They're not real. So I don't care. Randy Orton ended up winning anyway. And it was Randy Orton as a babyface versus Bray Wyatt as a heel. So that was the dynamic. Now it would be heel versus, I guess, Bray Wyatt's a heel. They haven't really established it, and I think they should, but it looks like it's heel versus heel now, as it is with Roman and Randy. So hope I got you up to speed. Brad, thanks for calling in, and please feel free to call back. Alrighty, well, let's take a little bit of a break from the voicemails, because I do have an Instagram question that I promised I would answer on the show. And let me pull it up here as I fumble through my phone live here. The question was from Kyle. I'll just leave it at that. I won't give away, I'm guessing the last part of it's your last name, so I won't do that. But Kyle on Instagram said, hey, Kyle from Norwich, UK. All right. So question for you. If the rumors are true that next WrestleMania, we could see Reigns versus The Rock and Orton versus Edge, assuming these are for the titles, then are we to assume that we can predict the winner of the 2021 Royal Rumble will either be The Rock or Edge? Surely WWE hasn't become that predictable. Looking forward to hearing your Raw review. Stay safe. So, yeah, I was supposed to originally review this on Raw, but since I am kind of piling all my voicemails into one show, that's why I'm answering it now. Winner of the 2021 Royal Rumble could very well be Edge. I think Edge has a much higher chance of winning than does The Rock. I think The Rock versus Reigns, I don't think The Rock needs to go through the Rumble or be a surprise entrant to face Reigns. I think he would make more sense to just kind of come out and challenge him. And I think Edge would be, since he debuted at number 21 last year, maybe he debuts at number 21 again this year. It'd be very poetic for him. I've always booked this as such. Like, here's how I would have booked it. I would have had Randy Orton untouchable as champion for 6+ months. Untouchable. No one hits a finisher. He's just escapable. He's garnering massive white hot heat. And he ends up plowing through people at the at Royal Rumble. He's like entrant 18 or 19. He ends up, you know, eliminating however many people. And he's standing alone in the ring. And he eliminates one after the other after the other. And then out comes Edge. And Edge and Orton fight. And, you know, you could say, well, Orton's the one who's champion. Why is he in the Rumble? We've seen it before. We've seen the champion in the Royal Rumble before, even though it made no sense. So that's how I would book it. Or just have Edge, even without Orton there, win the Rumble. And Orton is forced to face Edge for the championship at WrestleMania. That, to me, is a better story than The Rock. The Rock, again, could just come out of nowhere and be like, hey, I'm The Rock. I deserve a championship opportunity. And hey, there's also a built-in storyline with you attacking our Samoan family and being the head of the table. I don't know, though, if The Rock is interested without true fans being there, if he's interested in coming back for a payday when there's no fans for him to interact. The Rock's character is so built around fan interaction, it'd be very awkward, I think, honestly. Because The Rock has so many catchphrases and lines, it would just be weird. But I guess time will tell. Maybe people will be allowed back in an arena, even though today was, like, I think the highest recorded day of cases of coronavirus ever since the thing started, of over 100,000. So unfortunately, we're heading the wrong direction. But what we will have to see. Maybe things will turn around once the vaccine comes out. So, alrighty, on to the next voicemail.
Hello, this is Bo from Las Vegas. I've been listening to the voice, to the podcast for a couple weeks now. I love it. It's great stuff. Good content, entertaining. Got a couple questions, I guess. Number one, what is the problem with WWE and Lacey Evans? Why isn't she getting the push that she needs? They're messing with Lana. They're messing with Dana Brooke. These women that can't wrestle. I mean, they're slow. I mean, I like Zelina Vega. She's got the charisma. She's got the mic skills, but man, her matches are like bore fests. But here's Lacey Evans, who's got a great look. She's got great skills in the ring. She's got a great mic skills, and they're doing nothing with her. But instead, they're pushing people like Lana, you know, these women that I guess they're attractive, but they don't have any wrestling skills. They're boring. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on why Lacey Evans isn't getting a push. I think she's got all three things. She's got a great gimmick. She's got great mic skills, and she can wrestle. And then my second thing, hopefully I get it in time, is I'm pretty new to wrestling. I watched it back when I was a kid. It was about 20 years ago. And I just wanted to get your advice on watching it as an adult and knowing about the storylines and just how you want to be invested in wrestling, but some of the matches are just the worst. I mean, and you want to be invested, but you know how impossible some of these directions that creative has taken. And my personal opinion is I think because there's no live audience to tell management that we're tired of the Mysterio, Seth Rollins feud, and we're tired of all these things, because the live audience isn't there to push back, I think management is pretty much blind, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that. The idea of how do you watch it now as an adult, and maybe some advice on being disappointed, I guess. And then what do you think about the lack of audience and how that's affecting creative? Thank you.
Hey, Bo. Sounds like you're a first-time caller, but also just started listening to the show a few weeks ago. And welcome. Thank you so much for the compliments. I hope you stick around. We are, I think, a very unique show. I mean, I think we fit into a category of fans that I try to be real, right? Like, this is not a show that I'm putting on an act or I swear and get clicks. Like, so I'm glad that you are enjoying the show. And again, hopefully you continue to hang on to us. All right. So let me answer your latter questions first, because otherwise I'll forget them, and I'll get to Lacey Evans on the other end. As far as enjoying wrestling as an adult, so I guess it's kind of like believing in Santa Claus when you're, like, I'm 35 years old, maybe you're around the same age. If you're an adult, 18 plus, you kind of have to, at times, just remove your brain from your body. And those are the times when WWE is not doing a great job storytelling. They're, like, as you mentioned, when the matches are awful or you're not even sure why people are wrestling, they don't give you a story. Things just happen with no explanation, like Retribution showing up. They get contracts, even though they destroyed stuff, Raw Underground, all these things that you look at and you're like, this is eye rolling, and it makes you embarrassed to be a wrestling fan. Anybody can relate to that? Anybody out there, right? Even though you're a hardcore wrestling fan. Because if you are, you're listening to this show, you listen to wrestling podcasts, then I'd say you're a pretty hardcore fan. But there are times when, as much as I've been watching, and everyone else that has been watching for 20 plus years has been watching, there are moments when you feel embarrassed. It's secondhand embarrassment to be a fan. you're thinking, thank God no one's in the room with me, right? Like none of my friends are here watching this with me because I would be super embarrassed that I'm even watching this myself. And you're embarrassed on behalf of the product. Anybody else feel that way sometimes? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do too. So as an adult, here's what you have to do. You have to learn to love the product kind of the way it is. And that means there's going to be a lot of stuff you don't like, but there usually are one or two things that you can sink your teeth into. Right now for me, it's Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, one of the best storylines WWE has had in a long time. You can usually find characters that you can relate to and that they're doing a halfway decent job with. It's not always all crap all the time. And I think a lot of fans overgeneralize WWE for just, it's terrible, you know, but yet they keep watching every week. So I would say find those one or two things that you love and remind yourself why you love it and stick to it. Because if you look at the product as a whole as terrible, you're going to go away. You're going to stop watching wrestling. And I think that's doing a disservice to yourself because clearly you have a passion for it. Otherwise you wouldn't be watching and listening to this show. So yeah, again, it's a little bit like believing in Santa Claus at 35 because you remember how fun that was back then. I loved believing in Santa. I wish I still did. It was so much more fun as a kid. I wish I could just reinstill that belief in me. But when you get lost in a story, and when you forget you're watching wrestling and just want to see what happens next, they've got you. And it does still happen, believe it or not, even after, again, I've been watching since 97. That puts me at 23 years. I'm sure some of you have been watching a lot longer and some a lot shorter, but that's where I'm at. And I still love the moments that give you goosebumps, and I still get them. Edge returning at the Royal Rumble at number 21 last year. That was one, right? Jey Uso and Roman Reigns, the Roman Reigns heel turn. That was another one recently, too. Undertaker, anytime he returns, which should be also shortly, that is also special. There are still things that happen that are really good, but I understand there are a lot of matches that don't make sense, storylines that don't make sense, because WWE has lost their art of storytelling and have put the emphasis on just production and having great matches instead of having great stories where the matches are secondary. The matches are not a means to an end. They should be a vehicle to tell your story. They shouldn't be an end unto themselves. So... alrighty, and also about Lacey Evans before I move on. I don't know what they're doing with her. She seemed to be the flavor of the week for Vince a few months ago, and then they decided to turn her heel out of nowhere again and drop the whole I'm a Marine, I'm a mom thing and just remember that, you know, oh, wait, she's calling me a nasty. I'm supposed to not like her. And then she did the karaoke, that awful segment on SmackDown several months ago as well, sometime during the summer. And that didn't help her, nor did it help anyone in that segment. That was just one of those eye-rolling, God, please stop the pain moments. But, you know, she hasn't done much. And I think that right now, while they're not doing much, that could change at any moment. I mean, it really could. You know, she's proven that she can talk on the mic. She's improved in the ring. She's not outstanding, but she's good in the ring. So... and obviously the look, and she's in super good shape, and she stays out of trouble, all that stuff. So there's something there with Lacey, and they know it. I just think it's kind of cyclical. Like, it was Lacey's time, and then it gets to be Asuka's time, and then it gets, you know, like, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Like, they go in spurts, they go in cycles. It's just not the cycle for her right now, but I think it will be. You know, she's been out of the loop, the main event loop, for quite some time. Same with Dana Brooke, she's been kind of a joke. She has been a joke almost her entire career. She's the butt of the joke. She's in the match to take the fall. She's a good athlete, and she checks all the boxes. They just haven't done anything with her. She's kind of an odd promo. I've never found Dana Brooke's promos particularly engaging. But it's all about emotional investment, man. I mean, it's all about emotional investment. That's the key phrase that will forever be the driving force of success for wrestling, for movies, for books, for TV. It's emotional investment. That has been and always will be the key success factor. So, alrighty, thanks for calling in. On to the next voicemail.
Hey, Matt, it's Kyle from New York. So two things. One, I don't know if you heard, there's a rumor that Triple H and Stephanie McMahon might take over Friday Night SmackDown. Like how Triple H has NXT, him and Stephanie might take over Friday Night SmackDown. So I wonder what your thoughts are on that. All I'm wondering is, do you think they're going to book SmackDown really good like NXT? Do you think SmackDown's going to basically be the same as it was with Bruce Pritchard there and Eric Bischoff there? Or do you think it's actually going to be better if Triple H and Stephanie in charge? Maybe it'll be a better show. So I think it's already, in my opinion, I think it's already really good right now. But maybe when they're in charge, it'll be even better. My second question, you've already talked about this on one of your episodes, but Daniel Bryan has said this is his last full-time run in WWE. I think his contract expires like September 2021. So that's only like 10 or 11 more months left. So what I want to ask you is, what do you think his final match is going to be? So I can't even think of anyone right now, honestly. It'll probably come to me, but like right now, I can't think of anyone. So who do you think Daniel Bryan's final opponent in WWE is going to be? At least full-time. Maybe not, it won't be his final match. I mean, like, maybe it'll be his last match full-time, and his last match is part-time. So what do you think his final match or his final full-time match is going to be? So let me know, and yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Hey, Kyle. So let's address the Triple H, Stephanie McMahon taking over SmackDown. I heard that too. I don't think it honestly matters. I don't think it matters whether Triple H and Stephanie run it, whether it's Eric Bischoff, Paul Heyman, Jim Ross, myself, you. I don't think it matters who has the title of SmackDown executive producer, executive director. I honestly don't think that matters. And the reason it doesn't matter really are two words. Vince McMahon. Everything still flows through Vince. Vince has a certain amount of chain that he'll let his executive producers and directors get before he kind of reels them in or goes, well, I do it this way or that way, right? You've seen and heard about that micromanagement control. This isn't just me talking out of my backside. This has been corroborated many times through people leaving the company and through them doing other podcasts. So the control is so tight that I very much doubt it really will matter who indeed gets the, quote, control of SmackDown, because Vince is the ultimate filter. He has the ultimate say. And until Vince is gone, you won't see true sustainable change. How about that? I think that's a fair, honest answer. But also, as far as Daniel Bryan goes, his contract, I guess, does go through next September. He's got some time. And I think he'll have a nice run with Roman Reigns here for the next couple of months, if not longer. I think his final opponent, that's tough, because what if he's on a different brand by then? You know, I mean, it gets traded. Or WWE decides to just have their own random draft and have a season premiere in, you know, August. I mean, who the hell knows? But assuming he's on SmackDown with the current roster, I mean, it's got to be still Roman Reigns, right? I mean, or Triple H. You know, Triple H, I'm sure, could still go with Daniel Bryan, considering the story they have. But that would be his retirement match. It's hard. I don't think I've ever been asked what about his final full-time match. I would say it would be somebody that would injure him in an angle, which to me would be Roman Reigns right now. Could be Braun Strowman, right? I mean, who knows? To me, it would be Roman Reigns to injure him, which would explain why he's not there for a long time, and then he's kind of back on a part-time schedule. So, alrighty, let's get to that next voicemail.
Hey, Matt, it's Kyle from New York again. This is actually not a question about, like, WWE TV. It's a question about WWE Network. Well, I don't know how to explain this, but anyway, I've been a WWE fan since, like, 2010, my bad. I mean, WWE fan since WrestleMania 2010. And, the other day I was thinking to myself, I kind of want to, like, binge watch every single, like, Raw and SmackDown, like, under the WWE Network, in the pay-per-views too. But, like, I don't want to start from, like, old stuff and then, like, just binge watch, like, them all, one by one, all the way to, like, present day. But, like, I don't know where to start. So, like, my question is, what do you think would be a like the best year to start watching WWE? What would be the best year to start watching WWE? To start binge watching every Raw, every SmackDown, every pay per view. Like that's never the middle of the question. I couldn't think of anything else to say. So I'm listening to the binge watch. So that's my question. So that's it. Thanks.
Oh, hey Kyle, welcome back. So as far as what time frame to start watching and binge watching, wow. Well, number one, it depends on how much time you have on your hands. I mean, that's a hell of a time commitment to be able to go and binge watch every Raw and SmackDown. That's number one. Number two, I would like to start you at the beginning of an era. You know, I really would. I'd like to start you at the beginning of an era so that it's fair that you could analyze fairly that era. And this is a little bit of a biased selection, and it's only simply due to the fact that this is when I started, and I'd say 1997, right? Like Raw 1997, like summer of 97. That's just simply nothing more than being biased. And that's really when the Attitude Era was starting to crank up, officially. And so that's what I would say. If you want to skip the 90s and skip Austin, Rock, Triple H, all that, which, I mean, you're missing out big time, but you could go straight to the Ruthless Aggression Era, which started in 2002. You'll still have a little bit of a hangover from the Attitude Era with Austin there. The NWO comes in. You have The Rock, right? He's still there, kind of starting to fade out into his Hollywood dreams. But, and Goldberg in 2004 finally comes back and faces The Rock. So you could start in 02. Or then you could start in the PG era, which started in 2008. So, I mean, I really hate to direct you to tell you where to start. I'll give you the start of the eras, 97, 2002, 2008. So take your pick. But if you want to do what I did, start in the mid-1990s and then work your way up. It's a lot to digest. You're going to see a lot of stuff, and that's a heck of a time commitment. So good for you. Alrighty, on to that next one.
Hi, Matt. This is Solomon from Denver, Colorado, and I'm calling to talk about Survivor Series. I think the whole concept is bad. I think they should maybe have something like do two teams to, like they did in 2014 with Team Cena versus Team Authority. I think they should do something like that. Or if they're going to do brand versus brand, I think they should have it so that there's a consequence, such as maybe the winning team gets to, book the other show for a night or something like they've done in the past. Anyways, thanks. I love your shows. Bye.
Hey, Solomon. Thanks for calling in. And listen, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, I say this, and I say it throughout the year kind of sporadically, but I especially crank it up every time they try to shove this down our throats every November that we're supposed to care about a rivalry that's built into the schedule, and that suddenly everyone has complete and utter loyalty to the brand that they got drafted to a month ago. It's just preposterous, and like I said, there's nothing on the nothing on the line. There's literally nothing on the line. We've established that. You've established that. It's not even like bragging rights don't even matter because the fans don't care because they watch all brands most of the time or both brands, maybe not NXT so much. But it's a false premise that fans are supposed to care based on the marketing, like, oh, it's Raw versus SmackDown. Okay, well, great, because I watch both. So I have no loyalty or investment right off the bat. So congratulations. But yeah, yes, they should have put something on the line. They put something on the line. I don't know what that is. Like you said, maybe it's booking a show. I don't know. But if there's nothing on the line other than, haha, we beat you, then I don't care. I literally do not care about this pay-per-view. And it's sad because there are a lot of great matchups on this pay-per-view. And it's just a stepping stone to get to TLC and beyond. Because there's no titles on the line. It's nothing but bragging rights. That's it. Just rename this pay-per-view to bragging rights. That's essentially what this is. So, alrighty, on to that next voicemail.
Hi, it's Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland. I want to talk about, Asuka. Her as the champion, is it working at all? There's really nobody on Raw for her to face as a credible challenger at this point. But I don't know. It seems like there's something missing with the women's division on Raw in general. The next put is Mustafa Ali. Before I liked this group of him being part of Retribution, I just think he needs to start winning matches. But I want to like this group because I'm a fan of Mustafa Ali. So what do you think is next for Retribution? But thanks for the call. Bye.
Kyle, always good to hear from you. So two things that you mentioned. Asuka, your guess is as good as mine with the hell they're doing with her. It could be a lack of talent, a lack of a serious storyline. But the worst thing is what they're doing is just kind of floating her around being a comedy relief character as women's champion. It's maddening. I don't need to have her scream in Japanese and dance like she's, you know, a Saturday morning cartoon. It's embarrassing what they're doing with her. I don't know why they're not engaging her in a real feud. Maybe they're waiting on Charlotte Flair to possibly return shortly. I don't know. But there's nothing of substance going on with Asuka other than being involved with the Street Profits and saying she wants to smoke or sticking her in, you know, a random segment that's it's a mean nothing segment. I don't know. It's clear they have nothing for her. It's awful. But that's kind of the nature of what they're doing right now. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. But as far as Mustafa Ali goes, yeah, I'm a fan of him too. And I think that he found something being the leader of Retribution. But the whole Retribution group hasn't got a win. And they're this threatening group that's coming in and destroying everything. But man, they can't win a match. That makes no sense. It tells me they have no faith in this group. It tells me that they are kind of admitting, when you read between the lines, that this group sucked. Like, it's not working. That's what they're telling you by not having them, be a dominant force, winning after, you know, match after match after match after match. And Mustafa Ali's the leader. That also kind of tells you, look, I mean, I'm a big fan of him too, and he's certainly got more talent than what we've seen. But for their leader not to be revealed as a big name tells you that they don't have a lot of faith in this group or storyline. And nor should they. I wouldn't either. I've torn it for limb from limb. I'm not going to get into it. You guys have heard me rant on Retribution so many times that it hurts. So, alrighty. Well, let's continue here. And I believe this is our final voicemail. So let's see who it is.
Hey, Matt, this is Jeff again from the Philippines. And I just want to go on a rant about the guitar on the pole match. You see, this is one of those stipulations that doesn't make sense to me. Like, if the ending of the match should be a pin or submission, then why do they have to get the guitar and smash it through their opponent? So what if Jeff Hardy smashed the guitar on Elias, but Elias kicked out? Do they have to put another guitar on the pole so Elias could get another chance and he could smash Jeff Hardy with the guitar? And yeah, like, why do they have to use a guitar if the ending of the match should be a pin or submission? Table matches don't have to go through a pin or submission. They just have to go put their opponent through the table. And during Elias' return, he already said in a backstage interview that he knows that a red-haired guy was driving the car that hit him. But instead, he went after Jeff Hardy. Even if he knows that a red-haired guy was driving the car, they should be teaming up in here. Jeff Hardy and Elias should be teaming up against Sheamus. They're both on the same show. They're all in Raw. And the commentary team are just saying that it's not proven who is the driver of the car. And, but they're trying. I don't know, they're just too much blurred lines in this storyline. And yeah, that's all, Matt. Thank you. And have a great day.
Hey, Jeff. You are definitely justified in going on a rant there for what the whole premise of a guitar on a pole. We've seen it before, though. We've seen how many objects on a pole, right? We've seen pink slip on a pole. I think probably kendo stick on a pole match. We've seen many different items on a pole. And outside of the pink slip, which actually has real ramifications of you're fired if you don't get it, the weapon of choice, whatever's hanging above there, what if you don't grab it and you still beat your opponent? Do you win? Right? I mean, like, what if I have, it's a kendo stick on a pole match, but I end up beating my opponent with a chair and I never grab the kendo stick and it just remains up there. Do I lose? Am I required to go up to the pole and grab what's up there? I mean, I guess not. You know, I guess not, but that the whole Jeff Hardy thing with Elias makes no sense. And if he actually acknowledged that it's a red-haired guy that he knew was rumored to be driving the truck or the car, whatever it was, this is just ridiculous. It's just ridiculousness. And I believe the announcers alluded to this being over since Jeff Hardy got a clean victory over Elias on Monday with the guitar in a pole match. I think it's over. I hope it's over because this was not something I was invested in from the beginning, nor were many of the fans. I mean, it was kind of a forced rivalry to begin with. Elias has turned face to heel so many times that people are becoming indifferent to his character. And I believe that the fans would have been very quiet during this match, even with Jeff Hardy there. I really believe that. So fans not being there it's one of those things that is, it's so critical in pro wrestling. And when you don't have them there to give that immediate response, WWE just kind of does their own thing. Yeah, they have social media. Yeah, I know that's somewhat of a measuring stick, but certainly fans in attendance are the ones that are going to immediately tell you what's working, what's not. And it's in pro wrestling more than any other sport. That is key because other sports aren't driven by what the fans want. They just perform to their best level. It's true competition. In pro wrestling, it is what the fans want. You can create whatever story you want based on what the fans like and what they don't like. But when you can't hear what the fans like and don't like, you kind of just have to assume. So I bet you Vince is loving this too at the same time, being able to pump in crowd noise, be able to just do what he wants and have the crowd reaction on TV come across the way he's always wanted. Right. So he's kind of, I'm sure, also having fun on that end of it. So, all right. Well, that actually concludes all of our voicemails tonight. So I'm glad that they're finally cleaned out of my mailbox. But fill it back up, guys, because this is fun to be able to just do a single show and just plow through all of your voicemails. I hope you enjoyed it. You call the show at 518-952-0247. Again, that's 518-952-0247, or email the show at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Well, guys, that concludes the mailbag portion of the WWE podcast, kind of a fill-in version of the show rather than pumping these at the end of shows, beginning of shows. I think it's cleaner to do it this way. So, alrighty. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, tons of stuff coming the rest of the week. Rivalries, Week in Review, SmackDown Review with Michael Ritter on Saturday. Just so much stuff. So get yourself ready. Tons of stuff to come. Hopefully you're doing well, de-stressed, and things are going well. So, all right, everyone, take care. I'll talk to you next time.